Harry Kroeter will pick up on the point that, I believe, will pick up on the point that Peter just made about the importance of the internet in this enterprise. There was a piece in the New Republic last week by Richard Taruskin, who's a professor of music at Berkeley, and he was recalling an experiment that was done by somebody, just Joshua Bell, playing violin on the New York subway and seeing what people happen, and it was Bach's Chaconne in D minor. And the details aren't relevant, but I thought, what on earth is that? I mean, what version are we looking at? So I actually went on the web, and there was 20 or 30 shots on there on YouTube of Caesar Milstein playing all these things, Nathan Milstein, and it was just amazing to just find instantly this, what would have been completely obscure some time ago, versions and versions and versions of this. And I think that's just a wonderful thing that you're going to talk about, right?
The expansiveness of the internet. Part of it, anyway. Yeah. I feel that after that discussion about the universe, in Annie Hall, Christopher Walken says to Woody, I'd like to talk to you, you'll understand this. Sometimes at night, I'm watching these headlights coming towards me, and I had this desire to drive on the other side into, you know, this oncoming town. Woody's looking at this and says, well, yes, Dwayne, I've got to go now. I'm due back on planet Earth. To some extent, okay, that's where I think I'm going to try and go and work on it. Basically, I think Galileo's...
Could I just very briefly say, if you haven't looked at your program, that Harry is a chemist, was one of the discoverers of the structure of C60, Buckminster Fullerene, which he named, and is currently at Florida State University.
Okay.
And has one of those Nobel things as well.
I'd like to thank... I missed that one. But anyway, I'd also like to thank the Zepps family for a fantastic contribution to, I think, a very important event. They're British, so I'm sure at school they must have been called Zebedee or something like that. Is that right? Yeah, it must have been. A very wonderful character in English folk television. Anyway, let's look back to that Malraux, as some of you must know, predicted that the 21st century would be the century of religion. And basically, siècle sera religieux ou ne sera pas. Basically, my view on that. And the reemergence of religious discourse, Sarah Maitland says, has caught us on the hop, baffled, irritated, uncomprehending. That's to some extent where I feel. And here I'm standing at FSU and thinking about this, looking at these two guys from Mormon land. The reasons are manifold, and I think to some extent there's this materialistic world that many see, and they're looking for an identity, and the uncertainties and the insecurities are involved in globalization and diversity. I think as much as anything else, dogma is hardwired in childhood. It doesn't matter what, it could be Nazism, it could be communism, it could be capitalism, it could be religious ones, and it becomes a crutch. That as soon as you try to take that crutch away, tremendous defenses come up. That's what we're facing in the 21st century. Probably as interesting as anything is this, I won't make any comment, but this is a church, the modern 21st century church. Joel Osteen, writing a bestseller. I'm sure he's sold more than you have, than Peter, than you have. Your Best Life Now. And this is what we're up against. $25 million was given to them by the Bank of America, apparently, to build that church. My view is Enron's big mistake. They promised a payback in this life. How stupid they are, really. From the skeptic, reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, does not go away. My view is my reality is actually that which others believe in, and that's the problem. And let's look at one of the most remarkable ones from Florida. Alan Crotzer spent 24 years in jail for a crime he didn't commit. DNA got him out. Look at him. He doesn't hold a grudge, he says. God's been keeping me. It seems like he always puts someone in my life to help me through these times. It's been a long time coming. Thank God for this day. I think I, as an atheist, would probably commit a suicide in a Florida jail within 25 years. I think I have to recognize, to some extent, how important that was to this man. Well, thank God for this day. Well, who is God? Well, I'm going to show him. It's Alec Jeffries, Nottingham University, who developed fingerprinting. That's a miracle. And I don't know whether Alan, whom I'm hoping to interview later, sometime next year maybe, actually thinks about the science that did it. Education, education, education in the UK. Well, what about Gaza schooling? I hate Salman Rushdie. This is from CNN. Graduation ceremony in a kindergarten in Gaza. Boys, Allah Akbar, praise be Allah, Allah Akbar, praise be Allah, Allah Akbar. And it goes on, praise be, go on and on. Who is your role model? The Prophet, who is your role model? What is your path? Jihad. What is your path? Jihad. What is the most lofty aspiration? Death for the sake of Allah. What is more lofty as death for the sake of Allah? And we're going to maybe see what comes out in those eyes. Hate of Salman Rushdie. CNN, 2001, before 9/11. Speaker draws the audience. Our blood is ready for sacrifice. Listen, America, listen, Musharraf. Every Muslim child is going to be an Osama for you. A chilling message from an eight-year-old boy. No shortage of young boys who want to die for the cause. Qatarullah says he wants to join the jihad. He is not afraid to die. At 8 years old, how could he be afraid to die? He says, basically, it would be special, he says, for me to die in the name of jihad. His desire for jihad has his father's blessing. According to this religion, a woman over the age of 9 cannot be seen by a man of an outside family, outside the family. In a back room, she tells me, God willing, she too would like to see her son join the jihad. That's the schooling today in the 21st century. Not that long ago, I showed this last year, I'd like to show it many times. Let's play Protestants and Catholics, 30 years of separate schooling in Northern Ireland. If I were Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, this is how I would solve our problems. First, I'd split Northern Ireland into two parts, and I put Protestants on one and Catholics on the other side. David 14, I would pass a law saying that any Roman Catholic who set foot on the street to start trouble would be shot instantly without mercy. I would starve them like rats until there wasn't one left in Northern Ireland. That's the reality. Probably in spades in the Middle East. Education 1.0, my education. Well, let's look at what my education was. It was Meccano, Erectoset, building things like this, and Meccano footballs. The advertisements, Meccano boys, and today we've got to add girls, of course, are keen, ambitious, and inventive. No boy or girl who follows the Meccano hobby can be a bad boy or bad girl. We go on. I drew things, and I got good for my frog. I used to get very good for my math, so I ended up as a scientist. I acted at school, and I thought I'd show you this. I'm the handsome guy on the right here. The guy in the front, well, I taught him how to act. And if you want to know why I'm a scientist, you age better as a scientist than you do. And in fact, it's Ian McKellen, most fantastic actor of my generation. So I had a tremendous, wonderful education. But what is it going to be? What should it be? It's got to be kids educated together somehow. My favorite picture of a workshop, a buckyball workshop with young people in England. And unless we do that, I think we're going to have a lot more trouble. We're going to go on ad infinitum. Education USA, well, they should really know about the Declaration of Independence. The main issue there is liberty. And what is liberty? Well, no one said it better. If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. George Orwell. These guys are turning in their graves, okay, as they look at. What did they say about religious issues? It's on the internet. I haven't got time to tell you. I come from a wonderful town in England, or we lived there 3 months a year and did before. This is the White Hart Hotel, where Thomas Paine debated. There's a room up there, just to the right of this, where he discussed his rational ideas. Americans come here, pilgrimage to the place where Thomas Paine developed his ideas. It's now at Best Western, so you can stay there. Thomas Paine, certainly one of people we can be proud of. You will do me justice to remember that I've always supported the right of man to his own opinion, however different that opinion be from mine. He who denies to another this right makes a slave of himself to his present opinion, because he precludes himself the right of changing it. That is a very powerful statement. Jefferson, because religious belief or non-belief is such an important part of every person's life, the freedom of religion affects every individual. State churches that use government power to support themselves and force their views on persons of other faiths undermine our civil rights. Erecting the wall of separation between church and state, therefore, is absolutely essential to a free society. Adams, I was actually in Annapolis last week, where there's a monument to the Treaty of Tripoli. As the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims, it is declared that no pretext arising from religious opinion shall ever product an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries. The United States is not a Christian nation any more than it is a Jewish or Mohammedan one. Treaty of Tripoli, 1797, carried unanimously by Senate and signed into law by John Adams. Benjamin Franklin, I found Christian dogma unintelligible. Early in life, I absented myself from Christian assemblies. So basically, where do the miracles come from? No point praying. He's been out to lunch since Galileo. Okay, real miracles. Benjamin Franklin was really the start of, in the USA. Lightning, of course, killed lots of people in those days. Ministers rang the church bells and prayed to try and stop the bolts coming. Lightning seems to strike, said Franklin, every time the bells are ringing. One would think it was time for a new trick. Something that works, maybe. Maybe it's science. Well, yeah, it's the lightning conductor. We've forgotten. People don't know. They don't realize that trees set were on fire and people died lots of times. Penicillin, this fantastic molecule. Blood poisoning, this girl would have died in 1942. Just imagine if a priest or someone at Lourdes could do this, that would be a miracle, and it would cause something throughout the world. But nobody really cares about it today. They just don't realize. This is a true miracle worker, Norman Heatley, one of my heroes. Unknown, he didn't get the Nobel Prize. He actually did all the experiments to develop penicillin. Let's go on, because what's going on? I've shown you things from the internet already. There's been a discussion. And God exists, according to the Royal Society. This analysis basically strongly disagree, 73, 78.5, in a personal God. These are the statistics in belief in supernatural being. Well, let's get out of that and basically look at the NAS study. Basically, 90% pronounce that they don't believe. 95% of biologists in the National Academy of Sciences. Now, you've actually seen something which I was going to show, and I'm going to analyze it for you. Basically, it's the Templeton conversation. Does the universe have a purpose? The big questions conducted amongst leading scientists and scholars. And here it is, you've already seen. Okay, unlikely. Peter, no. Well, basically, that's no. Okay, and these are more. Maybe I wrote it down. I can't remember. Unlikely. No, I said it. Let's see. Unlikely. Not sure. Perhaps. Yes, no. Let me see. I hope so. And yes. Okay. Now, it's interesting to actually juxtapose that against the Royal Society one. Okay. Basically, the Templeton have not done anything like a scientific analysis of the situation. They've chosen who they want, and basically 50% of them have all said yes. Whereas if you go into the Royal Society survey, for what it's worth, it's basically 70 to 80%, and I think nearly 90% don't believe it. I challenge the Templeton Foundation to pay for the advertising of the Royal Society analysis, pay for a new NAS survey, and publish it in all the major newspapers, and put their mouth where their money would be, and announce once and for all that the consensus of the vast majority, 90% of those with the greatest expertise in assessing evidence, find no evidence whatsoever for so-called spiritual realities, which, of course, is an oxymoron. And then use their vast financial resources to do something worthwhile. That'll be the day. Okay, so basically, I think, let me just go on, because we've got zipped out of it, which I shouldn't have done, which is here. Okay. Under threat. I'm going to the last part of my talk. There's a miasma of anti-critical thinking in the media. It's unbelievable. Sam has pointed out that Bill Moyers has these people coming together to try to reconcile Genesis with the life in the modern world. Well, what can you get on the internet? Well, this is on there in YouTube, and I hope you'll watch it.
Well, I actually, it was interesting to me that I don't know if wasn't there something in the Constitution? I don't know if I'm still studying, but isn't there something about the separation of church and state? So therefore...
We got rid of that.
All right, okay. I thought maybe that the elected officials would try and practice that themselves then, maybe on a separation of church and state.
To even win a nomination in this country, you have to say you're a person of great faith. You have to pledge the people out there that you put your faith in things that are unprovable.
Uh-huh.
That you suspend critical thinking as the way to go.
Oh, come on, you don't really believe that.
Have you ever watched my show?
I do believe that.
Okay. But, I mean, you say that...
I thought when you went straight, all of this was going to change.
Oh.
When you got cured of your gayness, I thought this was going to snap right out of you.
But do you realize that in the 50s, the Mormons preached that the only way a black man could get into heaven was as a slave.
That's right.
Now, first of all, why you need a slave in heaven, I don't understand. I thought heaven, everything was good.
It's not heaven if you're the slave, is it? I mean, because you're working all the time. It's not heaven to you. It's a job.
Yeah. But maybe you have a problem with the fact that he's a Mormon.
What?
Maybe you have a problem with the fact that he's a Mormon.
I don't. I have a problem with all religions. That's what I'm saying. I'm actually defending the Mormons in a weird way.
Right.
Because I'm telling you, the more people find out, people don't know about Mormonism. When they find out, they will be amazed at how weird it really is.
You can go and watch this on YouTube, but I think what I wanted to point out from that, this woman said, you have a problem with him being a Mormon, right? That's incredible. She was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard. And she's sitting there thinking, you have a problem with being alone, that he thought that Jesus came to North America. And why is it that people don't ask this guy, do you actually really believe that Jesus came to North America? And it's Morton's fault. If he did believe that, you know, he came to North America, then... And if he doesn't, and he's lying, are these the credentials for someone to be president of the United States? And that applies, as Mayer says, to basically everything. If you go on YouTube again, probably you can actually watch a lot of people talking about some important issues, and I think it's quite interesting to do that. Let me take another one, basically.
If you believe, as I do, that the purpose of religion is to suck all the pleasure out of life and spit it in your eye, well then you might have trouble thinking of anything positive to say about it. But I think it's important to try, if just for a sense of balance. And so that's why I've decided to think of one or two nice things that I can say about each of the main religions. In particular, the three monotheistic dogmas which have enriched our civilization for so many centuries. The three desert dogmas, as I like to think of them, because between them they've done so much to make a desert of the human soul. Let's begin with Islam. Now, in the current climate of intimidation and special pleading, you might think it would be hard to think of anything nice to say about Islam, but I can think of a couple of things. Firstly, I like their symbol, the crescent moon. I find it much more attractive than the cross, possibly because it doesn't have anybody nailed to it. And also, whenever you see a large mosque full of worshippers praying together, I like the synchronized bowing. I think that's always very well done. Also, of course, we have radical Islam to thank for showing us so graphically what a huge problem religion can become. If not for all the hysterical, self-righteous bullying that we've been subjected to in recent years, many of us might still be laboring under the illusion that religion is relatively harmless. So thanks to radical Islam for the heads up on that one. What I like most about Christianity is that it's not Islam, which is a major bonus in my opinion. Unfortunately, it is Christianity, which kind of takes most of the shine off it for me. I like the fact that the Inquisition is over and that Christian history is no longer being written in blood. I think that's quite...
I thought I'd show you. Look, he's got 28 of them on there. Go and see him if he's still alive. Okay, Sonny Baines, one of the most insidious programs I've ever been invited to apply for, needless to say, I decline, is the Templeton Cambridge Journalism Fellowships. Run in part by the Faculty of Divinity, it's an opportunity to examine the dynamic and creative interface between science and religion, or in other words, to help blur the edges between science and religion. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. The fellowship is part of a concerted attempt by the Templeton Foundation to co-opt the scientific establishment in this country, UK, and many others. I first heard of it when I received an email and about an essay competition for 100K. The winner that year was Nobel Prize winner Charles Town. What a brilliant idea to offer such a huge sum, then just give the prize to the writer with the best scientific credentials. Instant credibility. And then he went on to win the Templeton Prize, which is about $1.5 million. Okay, there you go, expenses. There was a program at the Royal Society. The expenses were being paid by the Templeton Foundation. Sonny Baines contacted Scott Keir, the Royal Society. We're pleased to work with organizations that complement our aims. How about that? Okay, unbelievable. Go in, she's a good journalist on her, who is actually running the Templeton Foundation, the same person who is running the Let Freedom Ring. Sean Carroll, I'm not sure which of these is Sean Carroll, but I'll assume it's the guy on the left. Sean, sorry, she's a bit prettier than you are. But he goes on, the entire purpose of the Templeton Foundation is to blur the line between straightforward science and explicit religious activity, making it seem like the two enterprises are part of one big undertaking. An atheist, Carroll did not want his name to be implicitly associated with an effort I find to be woefully misguided. Sean, I'm on your side. I've made over 110 programs for television. Over half of them have been shown on the BBC. I've got interviews with Nobel Prize winners on these issues, and I thought I'd just show you little bits from some of these, okay? This is Koshiba, a Japanese Nobel laureate, and it's really illuminating to talk to these people, as I have done.
Is it fair for me to ask you what your belief are about a supernatural?
He means God?
Yes.
I don't know. You know, science deal with only those things which you can confirm by observation or by experiment. God doesn't come into that category.
I can go on because I've interviewed a lot of these, and I thought I'd just show you little snippets from... Yeah, okay, don't worry.
Good for it.
How are we going?
She held it in.
Yeah. Okay.
Does this have religious implications for you?
We are living in a totally ridiculous world. Yeah. We have all kinds of things, from horoscopes to Zen Buddhism, to faith healers, to religions, to what have you. All kinds of things are going around in the world, and the world, generally speaking, including what politicians do and the kind of...
I'll just show you, they're all on the Vega site, and you can see them. 9 out of 10 are atheists, for what it's worth, and lots of these things. I think we need a new approach, and I'm using the internet for outreach, an educational outreach. I call it global educational outreach. We've got to get to young kids. I think, as Daniel said, there's no point worrying about the guys who are already hardwired. We somehow get to young people. And we're using capture station technology, which really can go throughout the world. Basically, it's very inexpensive. We have a studio at Florida State, and I'm getting my colleagues to actually do something about this. Okay. We're helping the teacher, and this is the site, geoset.info. We're hoping that others will do all the same. I haven't got time to show you some of the wonderful programs. This one is about one of my colleagues, he's 86, who said, if there were no penicillin, I wouldn't have a right arm. Okay, so I'm not only getting students and young people to talk about their projects. We're also developing a program. I'm part of the FCR, the Florida Center for Research in Education in Science, Technology, and Engineering and Maths. We're developing sort of downloadable modules for teachers and video demonstrations of how to use it. In fact, let's forget about the fact there are no teachers out there who can teach science. Let's send them the material. Let's work with what we've got. It's not going to change in the next 20, 30 years. Algebra, I do little workshops for small kids on algebra. Basically, they have no problem doing this, okay, and and writing down and getting used to equations and things of this nature. It doesn't matter where they are in the world. It's not a problem. We're sending the material down this way. It's globally accessible. So what we do in Florida is accessible around the world. I've done workshops, this one in Mexico. In 2 weeks' time, I'll be back in Mexico doing another one. This was a workshop in Malaysia. And this one's to Iceland on the internet. I've done them also with Manchester United when I show this young women something time screaming, but unfortunately it's not me on the right, it's the bloke on the left that they're screaming at, you know. I've done that to 3,000 kids throughout the whole of Australia on the internet. This is the kids learning algebra in Iceland from me in Florida. It's going all that. But Sheffield, Cambridge, Toyo University in Japan, probably in South Africa and also in China, are aiming to set up the same sites. We can set up a chain reaction of educational programs designed to help teachers and show something about it. And we in the scientific community have the talent there because we speak an international language. This is only one. Students from China and everywhere else have been in my group over the years. We have to look at global citizenship. We have to recognize that people like Alan Crotzer probably would have deteriorated terribly in jail if he hadn't had something. I don't know what I could say to him that it made like. And science does it. We must link the humanitarian organizations. There's so many of them, but they're not working together. This is only one that I'm involved with. How can we use the internet to make sure that they can work together and synergistically make an impact? My last couple of slides, basically, I think this is a fantastic one. The hottest place in hell is reserved for those who, faced with moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. I think we're in that situation at the present time. Imagine if all that money spent on the Iraq war could have been spent on education in the Middle East. Instead of bombing the schools, why don't we bomb them with Meccano and Erectoset? Okay? So I think we must come out of this conference with a down-to-earth attitude. I think by the end of tomorrow, we've got to think of some real strategies. I've got my little one to try and help teachers wherever they are. And finally, always look on the bright side. Let's hope global warming gets us before they do. So that's, thank you very much.
So two questions, and then we've got to move on. So Darren, you've got one. Stuart's got one at the back. Ellen, you've got one. Three questions, okay.
Harry, thank you for showing all these good people that we in Tallahassee think the way we do.
You're not the only one. It's a hotbed of atheism. But don't tell the question. But there you go.
I have a question for you and a question for some of the other speakers, actually. It's an issue that's come up. It seems that we've been talking about religion almost exclusively in terms of the bad things that it does in the world, and those are clear to many of us. But I think that in some ways the issue is a little bit more complicated. You mentioned praying. What's the use in praying? Well, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that praying, in fact, boosts people's subjective well-being. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that religious people are actually happier than non-religious people. And I think this complicates issues here a little bit, because if we think of one of the central goals of the Enlightenment is to increase this worldly happiness, and now we have evidence suggest that, like this man who, you know, was able to endure 25 years of prison through his faith, we have to think of the this worldly benefits of religion as well and factor that into the mix. And I just wanted to kind of throw that out there for discussion for the rest of the day.
All of us in this room recognize that. And we've been struggling to find something that has a rational impact. And I think we're struggling even now, and I have that. Yes, we can go into the fantastic discussions and philosophical, if you wish, or discussions of how to develop this. But nevertheless, we have to face the fact it's very easy. This guy, Joel Osteen, I don't know, 40,000 people turn out on Sunday. Peter or Richard, how many would turn out to hear us talk about this? And he's got a book, you know, making them feel it's great. You can be a Christian and still make a lot of money. They want to hear that. I don't have an answer to that. My only little contribution is I've been around the world giving little workshops for little kids, and they're the same wherever you are. I look at these little kids' eyes, and I look at those kids in the madrasa, 6 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, reading nothing but the Quran. And then look at my own childhood, right? reading Dostoevsky at 14 or whatever, and then playing tennis and stuff like this, and realize we've got a really bad virus in there. Well, how can we? I think Dan is right. We've got to somehow work out. And there are going to be, in the next few years, there are initiatives in the Middle East. A significant amount of money is being put up by some people with a lot of money who recognize the problems, okay? And I'm hopeful, I've got 1 year that I'm going to focus on this, trying to develop some way in which people like us can actually just say, okay, the 1 billion people bow and whatever, okay? How can we use that in the internet and get to the teachers? Because the medium is the teacher. These teachers now in the madrasas are teaching these to hate everybody who isn't a Muslim, okay? Hopefully we can work and get there before it's too late. I don't have anything to tell you. I think we each have to do our bit. And that's where the internet is incredible, because it allows me to do something that was just not possible while people like Murdoch and others were in charge, and still are in charge, of television. Television is no use whatsoever in actually educating people in major issues, because it's controlled by people who are basically, I thought Mother Jones said something very powerful about Murdoch, a man with no ethics or whatever, for a world without them. And I think somehow we have to show that we may be atheistic, but we do have ethics, and they're drawn from humanity. Peter was absolutely right. We should be proud of inventing humanity. You and I know there was no God, so we did it anyway.
You're getting two speeches here. John Hyde.
I think we're all here very concerned about the dangers of tribalism and the ways that religion can stimulate and trigger very dangerous tribalism. I hear a lot of elements in your talk that are calling the tribe together to fight those dangerous outsiders led by the Templeton Foundation. Your Dante quote, the tone of your talk, in so many ways, I think you're calling on us to join together to do battle, and there's a special place in hell reserved for those who don't join. This, I believe, is the most dangerous form of corruption that we have in science. Science is, in general, a very pure, uncorrupted enterprise, except in places where medical companies pay for research and then hide research they don't like. I think the main form of corruption we have is exactly this kind of moralistic tribalism. Now, in psychology, we have our research agenda has been terribly skewed by the National Institutes of Mental Health, which basically funded research on mental illness, no interest in the positive aspects of life. The Templeton Foundation comes along, gives a lot of money to fund research on positive psychology. No corruption whatsoever. They give us the money, we do the research. There is never any attempt to suppress or use the research for their purposes. They decided that they would like to, that John Templeton wanted to use his money to increase the amount of research in a certain area. In psychology, the Templeton Foundation has been a force for good. There has been no corruption, no pressure. I don't know what's going on in the natural sciences. Maybe things are more alarming there. But even still, I think that given the ringing quotes that we've heard today about the glories of science, we would do ourselves much greater credit, we would live up to our ideals, if we would say, fine, you want to fund research? As long as there's no corruption, fund research. If truth is left, if the best research is done and the truth comes out, ultimately the truth will come out. I think it is counterproductive, unless you know something I don't, unless Templeton is really twisting people's arms or lying or something like that, I think we would do much better to say, great, Mr. Templeton, if you want to give money to researchers, that's your business, than to say, hey, we have to band together to fight them.
Okay, I think that's wrong. And I'll tell you why. It's bound up with what Sean Carroll said and what Sidney Bain said. What they're doing is just using you as they did during the Second World War, and they put swastikas on the side of their Messerschmitt. The Templeton Foundation will not move one step away from a religious evangelical position. Now, I agree what they're doing is very, very clever in the sense that they're funding, say, we've got no strings attached here, but I'm asking them to now look at the study that they claim to be is important to them, the great questions, and ask them a statistical analysis. And I'm pointing out that the statistical analysis of the Royal Society on that issue is 90% atheistic. They are I guarantee they will never change their particular position. You have to dig deep into their mission statement. The mission statement is to actually get spiritual realities. I know people are taking the money. I know a lot of people, but that's one. I mean, Sean, I'd be happy to for you to make a statement on this too. I mean, I think the point about it is, yes, they're blurring the borderlines. The question is, will they do what the scientific community did when they saw cold fusion?
The Templeton Foundation funded the biggest study ever done on prayer and healing.
Okay, well then I...
All right, you have to stand corrected. And how could you have missed this? This was a huge news story.
Well, I didn't see that it was a Templeton Foundation, but...
They funded the whole thing, and they published it, even though it refuted exactly everything you just said that they would say. So you're wrong. Well, you're absolutely wrong.
Just a minute.
The data have refuted you. You need to apologize to the Templeton Foundation. No, you're wrong. The data have spoken. You are not being a scientist now. You're being an activist.
I will accept that particular point.
Oh, okay. And then what?
Well, what I would say is look at the advertisement. The advertisement said, I put the statistical data on one side and the non-statistical data on the other side. That is advertising by the Templeton Foundation. Okay.
Not an attempt at a scientific study of
who
believes
the problem.
It. Yeah, well, so
they
what?
Claim to
They're
be.
Not claiming
they claim
that.
To be doing
No, they
that.
Don't.
They claim to be doing
not
that.
Not for that. That project was an essay contest, not a research study.
Well, what else are they saying? That we want to do scientific, we want to find scientific basis for these realities. I accept fully what you said about that. I wasn't aware that it was Templeton funded. Okay.
Thank you.
However, at the end of the day, will they accept? Will they accept there are no spiritual realities? Will they come out and make that? This is the point that I'm trying to make.
Are you? Is this on this?
Is
point?
This on?
Yeah, but is this on this point? Because
yeah.
I want to finish.
No, it is not on this point at all.
Okay.
Actually, it's a little bit more mundane since I'm both a neuroscientist and a science educator at this point. And I'm out in the trenches with the students. And, you know, the premise that I enjoy hearing from everybody is that knowledge is going to benefit society. Because I think what's true, it's how I base my life, and it's what I do. But I think what's lacking for all of us is that a truth? Is that, you know, have we studied it enough to know that? And, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm more of the scientist, optimist viewpoint of that. But I'm not totally convinced, especially, you know, I deal with the students on a day-to-day basis, but I think we need as a group to study that, to continue to look at ourselves and to look at that issue, because, you know, that's what Dan Dennett believes, that's all we believe. If you disseminate the knowledge, if people have access to it, it changes, it moderates their opinions, it moderates their social behavior, and that's what we wish for. But I'm hopeful but not convinced.
Well, I can only answer that I don't think that education in the West, of a general education of all across all the boundaries, a cross-disciplinary one, is going to be worse than just reading the Quran from morning
Correct.
To night. And I think if you say, well, I would hope that you would get better decisions on the basis of knowledge rather than ignorance. That's the only thing we've got.
Yeah,
I think that's the answer. Of course, there are going to be people who are going to, if it's valuable and useful, people are going to misuse it, I think. But by and large, I think it's the only thing we have.
Right.
Yeah, I think we have to, in the interest of time, actually. Jerry, just like to...
Well, just briefly on Templeton, for the record, they withdrew funding from the infamous Discovery Institute after Discovery misappropriated Templeton funds to advocate intelligent design theory. For whatever it's worth, Templeton embraces evolution. I've worked closely with them on a few projects. There are Christians in charge of Templeton. There are atheists in charge of Templeton. So you get a bit of a mixed bag there. And I endorse what Michael said about the prayer and healing study.
So, okay.
I think the point is what Sean's making. I think it's a fair point, and it's a blurring the boundary lines.
Comment on this, because we did
sure.
Templeton.
No, I agree.
At great length last year with Charles Harper here.
Yeah. But
and we generated a great deal of hate and no light whatsoever.
Yeah, so I'll just say this very quickly and filled with facts. So I do think that the Templeton Foundation has often given money to scientists without strings attached. And I think there are demonstrable examples of that. There are also examples where they give money to someone who is holding a conference, for example, on submillimeter radio astronomy, and they say, by the way, we'll give you extra money to have a public speaker. And they bring in a public speaker, and the public speaker, Charlie Towns, Nobel Prize winner, gives a talk on how my scientific researches have led me to believe in the existence of God. And that is something that would not have happened if the money had come from the National Science Foundation.
All right, so, Harry, thank you.